This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. North Carolina's coastline is guarded by several hundred miles of barrier islands. The water on the inside of those barrier islands is more gentle than the harsh Atlantic. And for that reason, barge captains, fishermen, and recreational sailors have long relied on that inside passage, in particular, North Carolina's portion of the Intracoastal Waterway. Like most waterways, those along North Carolina's inside coast regularly fill up with sand and sediment. But because those routes serve interstate boat traffic, the dredging has always been paid for by the federal government. But not this year. Money to dredge North Carolina's 300 miles of the ICW and most of the inlets that access the ICW, that money has been left out of President Bush's budget. According to Washington and the Bush administration, the nature of boat traffic along the coast of North Carolina has changed from commercial to recreational, and so it's now up to the state and local communities to pay for maintaining the ICW and keeping those channels deep enough for boats to pass through. So today we're talking about dredging the ICW in North Carolina and who should pay for it. We welcome your calls this hour. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. If you use the ICW or live near it, we'd like to hear your view. Or if you might be somebody who would have to pay for it if the state takes up that slack, our number is 1-877-962-9862. With us this hour is Gareth McGrath. He's a reporter who covers coastal issues for the Wilmington News Star. Thanks for being with us, Gareth.
Thanks for being pleasure being with you, Melinda.
And I should say you're with the Star News in Wilmington, and you've been covering this issue for some time. Mm-hmm. So the news here is that the money that the administration wanting to give to the Corps of Engineers for dredging the ICW, that's being cut back. What's the rationale for cutting back that funding?
Well, the funding for the maintenance of the Intercoastal Waterway has been on a downward trend for a number of years, whether it's been a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. What makes it different in this year and last year also was that instead of a reduced amount where at least a waterway could be maintained, if not improved, there's zero money. It was zeroed out in President Bush's budget last year and his proposed budget for next year. And that has a lot of the communities, coastal communities of barrier islands, concerned. They're used to fighting for funds for the front side of their islands, where their beaches are, for beach renourishment projects or trying to get on the federal beach renourishment list. But they've always been thinking that their backside, where the Intercoastal Waterway is, and their sides, where the shallow draft inlets are, would be safe from any funding cuts. And now they're finding out that's not true.
Yeah. There are estimates of what it would take in terms of money, no matter who pays for it, for keeping the 308 miles of the Intracoastal Waterway in North Carolina dredged or at a depth where boats could pass through safely. And I believe they're talking about keeping it at 8 feet deep so that most boats that need to could get mm-hmm. through there. What kind of price tag are they putting on it, regardless of whose money it is?
You're looking at probably about $6-7 million to maintain it as it is now. To make necessary improvements to maybe deepen all sections to 8, even 9 feet, you're probably talking somewhere around $9-10 million. And when we talk to our folks in the our boaters and folks in the industry down here, they say that the past years of the patchwork maintenance, if you will, is really taking its toll. And sooner or later, we will need to do some serious investment to improve that waterway.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a distinction made between the Intracoastal Waterway, and that would be those channels that run kind of parallel to the barrier islands and to the mainland, and the inlets that go out to the ocean. Is there not?
Yes, the shallow draft inlets, as they're called, which are primarily all the inlets out to the ocean except for the mouth of the Cape Fear River, Beaufort Inlet leading up to the port at Morehead City, and also Oregon Inlet. They're looked at separately, and the Corps has generally spent about $500,000 a year maintaining the five or six shallow draft inlets we have here in North Carolina. And since those primarily serve recreational boaters and a few commercial fishermen, they're looked at separately by the Corps, a separate budget item.
Now, there is a distinction that the federal government has made, and it's, as I understand, their rationale for cutting back the funding, and that is that in the past they would say you had to a state had to show that so much X amount of commercial traffic, like barges, used the intracoastal waterway within that state. And so that's where, is that part of the rationale for cutting it out here in North Carolina, cutting back the funding?
Yeah, they look at the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway, which runs from basically Norfolk, Virginia area down to Jacksonville, as one waterway, and they look at the number of barge ton miles, if you will, that travel on that waterway. And it's minuscule compared to the recreational traffic the waterway now handles. There are waterways in the country, like obviously the Mississippi River, the intercoastal waterway that runs along the Gulf of Mexico around Louisiana, Mississippi, that handles a lot of barge traffic with the petrochemical industry. Even the Ohio River still carries a lot of commercial traffic. And the White House's rationale is that the intercoastal waterway no longer is an important source of commerce in this country, and therefore those federal dredging dollars should be used on those waterways, on those water resources where barge traffic, where commercial traffic is still heavy and is still using them for transport.
So in North Carolina, we have a lot of fishermen who go out, but that their boats going out don't count?
That is correct.
Even though it's for commerce?
Yes. And you can say the commerce, obviously folks here in North Carolina would like to take a broad look at commerce and say, if you take an excursion on a boat up and down the Intercoastal Waterway, tourists come from Ohio someplace, those dollars should be counted as commerce also. And the administration has stuck to their definition that it's primarily barge traffic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We are talking with Gareth McGrath, who is a reporter for the Wilmington Star News, talking about the Intracoastal Waterway and the dredging along it. The federal government is calling for cutting back the funding there. And we're talking about who should pay for that. If the federal government doesn't, should that be up to the state to pick up that tab? 1-877-962-9862 is our number. Mike is joining us from Raleigh now. Hi there, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So what do you think? Who should pay for the ICW dredging to keep it clear for boats to go through?
Well, if you're a regular user of the Intracoastal Waterway, you'll realize that it's just not North Carolinians that are using it. I was on the water this weekend down in the Moorhead City area and encountered both commercial barge traffic, military traffic, and believe me, a tremendous amount of people from other states that are going back and forth between, I guess, New York and Florida to move their boats each year. So the impact on the revenues for North Carolina are tremendous up and down that waterway. And if you can't really identify a way to charge the individual boaters, and it looks like to me the federal government would want to continue to support that that waterway.
Yeah. But Gareth McGrath, the federal government is saying it doesn't have the money right now, isn't it?
That's correct. As we all know, we're President Bush has said we're a war economy. We have a deficit that many say is out of control, and President Bush has proposed cutting back, I think, about 150 federal programs this year alone, and that includes funding for many of the Corps' water resource projects, not only the waterways, maintaining the waterways, but also beach and nourishment projects. And money is tight, and when we talk to our delegation up in Washington, we hear that again and again, that money is tight for all these programs, and so I think it's going to be a real battle to get even some money put back into the Corps for dredging of these waterways and inlets.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Intracoastal Waterway. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. Joining us now is Jim Lutze, who is Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington. He's also chair of a state commission looking at the economic impact of the ICW, the inlets and other waterways on North Carolina's coastal communities. And he joins us from Moorhead City. Hi there, Jim Lutze.
Very happy to be with you.
Okay. Well, I understand you're on the road today, traveling along the ICW in ramping up for this study that's about to take place?
Well, what I'm doing right now is writing an article for Metro Magazine on the Intercoastal Waterway and talking to watermen and people who are building developments along the waterway, as well as hoteliers and various other people who have an interest in the waterway.
Mm-hmm. So what is the study that's going to be done, though, which is a separate deal? What is it going to be measuring? What's it going to look at?
What it's going to start, it will eventually be a $300,000 economic impact study. We'll probably do, the scientists will, or the economists and the environmental economists, this summer will be looking primarily at commercial and recreational boating traffic and talking to people along the waterway about how much money they spend, how much money they leave here in North Carolina, and how much of their business is connected with the Intercoastal Waterway. And the thing that most people don't realize about the Intercoastal Waterway is, although it is a narrow waterway, it connects miles and miles and miles, thousands of miles, literally, of shoreline in North Carolina to the sea and to other points north or south, so that developments that are being built along Pamlico Sound or Albemarle Sound, although they may be 25 or 30 miles away from the Intercoastal Waterway, profit from the fact that the Intercoastal Waterway is there and provides boat access for people that want to come and build in those areas. So there's a huge economic impact, but we want to be precise about what that impact is.
Now, have you seen places on the ICW that have shoaled up? Because
absolutely. Well, anyone who runs their boat, and I'm a boater, runs their boat along the ICW. I was out doing some of the southern section of the waterway. I was out about 4 hours, and I heard at least four calls to sea tow asking for assistance for boats that have run aground. So there's a steady stream of boats who run aground and then have to be pulled off, and some of them do damage to their boats. And so the waterway technically is supposed to be kept at 12 feet, and in some areas it's less than 2 feet deep at low tide.
We're talking with Jim Lutze, who is Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington, and he's going to be chairing a study of the economic impact of the ICW. Also with us, Gareth McGrath, a reporter for the Wilmington Star News. We continue our conversation about the Intracoastal Waterway and who should pay for the dredging of it to allow boats to go through. The number's 1-877-962-9862. Support for the State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. We're talking today about the 308 miles of the Intracoastal Waterway that wind through North Carolina, and in particular, the issue of dredging those channels so that boats can pass safely through. President Bush's budgets in recent years have scaled back the amount of money the federal government will pay for the Army Corps of Engineers to do the dredging on the ICW in North Carolina, and the president's proposed budget for next year includes no money at all for dredging the ICW in the state. By some estimates, the cost of keeping the ICW clear in North Carolina is about $7 million a year. Federal government has paid for that till now. The question is, should the state step in if the federal money does not come through? And what would happen if no one paid to clear the channels? With us is Wilmington Star News reporter Gareth McGrath, who's been covering the story for a few years, and Jim Lutze, who is Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington and Chair of the Congressional Coastal Waterway Advisory and Action Committee. We welcome your calls, 1-877-962-9862. Well, Jim Lutze, if local economies, it's thought, get so much from the waterway coming through their towns, should those local towns pay for the maintenance of the ICW?
I think this is a slippery slope that I think it would be unwise for us to go down. But aside from that, that is that local areas pay for local amenities, then they can certainly claim that they are the ones that only ones that have access to them, whether that might be the Intercoastal Waterway or the beach. But the Intercoastal Waterway loses its true value if it isn't maintained along its entire length. So this is not just a problem for North Carolina. North Carolina keeps its section of the Intercoastal Waterway open, and South Carolina doesn't, or Georgia doesn't, then you lose the benefit. But the other point is that Gareth made is that when you're out on the Intercoastal Waterway, you will see that many of the boats are not from North Carolina, certainly not from coastal North Carolina. So I think local communities can legitimately make the case of, why should we be paying for boats from Florida and Texas and New York and South Carolina to use the waterway when it is more of a national problem? I think that there are a couple of quick points, but I think the Intercoastal Waterway should be viewed like an interstate highway, because that is, in fact, what it is an interstate water highway, a far cheaper way of transporting goods than on the roads, and less polluting, and there are a whole lot of other reasons for for the intercoastal waterway. But I also would like to make the point that this is a large national issue. The federal government, because of tax cuts, doesn't have the money to do some of these things. And many people who like tax cuts also like federal services. So when you're in a situation like we're currently in which the federal government's revenue coming in is the lowest it's been since 1960, and we are also waging a war and doing a variety of other things, you're going to run into this situation. With all kinds of different programs. So the Intercoastal is just one of many that's being affected by the tax cuts that we were all so happy to have.
Well, Gareth McGrath, in your reporting over the years, you've noted that the administration would call for little money, and then some money would eventually come through thanks to members of Congress along the ICW, including those in North Carolina, Mike McIntyre in your part of North Carolina, southeastern part. Walter Jones is also now pushing for more money to go into the budget. Will that prevail again this year when, you know, the administration may say one thing, zero for the funding, and then members of Congress bring home the bacon, so to speak?
Sure. And I think it's going to be, as I said earlier, very, very tight this year to do that. We might see some minimal amounts added to the appropriations bill that are making our way through Congress right now. But I'd be very surprised if we see the amounts approaching the $6-7 million that the Corps says it needs to maintain the waterway. And if I can, just echoing comments by Dr. Luzzi, the snowbirds, as we call them, the folks who transit with their big boats from the Northeast down to Florida in the winter and then do the reverse commute this time of year going back up north, we hear story after story about these folks docking at our marinas here in North Carolina and spending $1,500, $2,000 a pop on fuel and restaurants and dockage fees and even mechanical fees when they have problems with their boats. And those are all employing local folks, their local jobs, and that's money that is being kept here and being spent here in the community. And it's that kind of that kind of revenue that I think backers of the Intercoastal Waterway really wish the federal government would take into account.
Mm-hmm. Is that a hard one to play, a hard card to play politically, though? Because, you know, you could call up an image of, not everybody who has a boat has a honking big sailboat.
Sure.
or motor yacht. There are people who have much more modest boats that would benefit by the dredging. But
But
there is that image of, you know, somebody owns a big boat, and why should federal money be spent on them?
Yeah, and you're right. That is sometimes a problem that I think the backers of the Intercoastal do have to overcome to some degree. But I know the NC Marine Trade Services Center at Dr. Luzzi's old haunt, the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, they've pegged that, the 200 or so marinas along the coast employ about 10,000 folks, and the revenue is about $500 million a year. I think that includes the boat building industry, too, which is very large here in North Carolina. And I think all of that could be at risk if the waterway is allowed to shoal up, or if, as Dr. Luzzi alluded to, if we do have communities that decide to dredge the part of the intercoastal around their town, but if we don't have that, we just have ribbons of areas that are accessible, the intercoastal will lose, one, its appeal, and two, I think its real economic impact.
Okay. Let's go to the phones, 1-877-962-9862. Albert is in Raleigh. Hi, Albert.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm listening to your program, and I'm a boater myself. I think that we, the boaters, should be paying for that. I mean, it's just like when you pay your tax for your car, basically. I mean, having a boat, besides being a commercial use, anybody who has a commercial use for a boat, that will be one thing. So you have a special license for that, commercial license for the use of the intercoastal. Anybody else basically is using it for joy and for pleasure. It's something that you don't have to have. It's something that is there available for you. As far as the jobs, they're talking about like securing the jobs and how much money is spent in repairs and so forth. When you have a boat, you go on a boat on a daily basis, you have a problem. You have to fix it. You cannot put it back on the road, keep it to Virginia or to Georgia. So basically, tax or no tax, when you have to have the repair, the job will remain in North Carolina. You have to make the repair here. So I think it's very clear.
So are you saying everybody who owns a boat should pay, even if they don't go in the eastern part of the state to
If you exercise, if you want to, it's almost like when you have a fishing license, right? So if you're in from the state or out of state, or if you have a license to wildlife, or, you know, for rivers, or not for saltwater or whatever. So basically, if you exercise, if you want to use the waterway, I mean, the waterway is free. So basically, by scale, by weight, by the size of the boat, so you will be paying. So it's not, for example, you're not restricting me as far, I'm not going to pay, let's say, $20,000 on a license if I have a dinghy, you know, a little boat, right? So you have a small boat, that's all that you have. So you have a scale that goes within that kind of a boat. So it's not something that is being calculated beyond your means. So if you have a yacht that is 80 feet or so, basically you have the means to have the yacht and to maintain the yacht. So when you go to the marina, you pay by footage anyway. So it's a standard thing. The repair thing and the industry and how much money people leave in North Carolina, if they're passerbys or, I mean, we go on a boat, and on a daily basis, basically, you have something to fix on a boat.
Okay. All right. I'm going to put your comments to our guests. Jim Lucy,
Yeah, I think the same ought to apply to the interstate highway. Instead, of every individual ought to pay directly toward maintaining the highways rather than there be, in other words, this. His analogy would certainly apply to and airports, airplanes, all of these things. The public ought to pay directly for them based on their use. Only people who fly should be charged for airports.
So are we talking about a toll?
Well,
I mean, how practical is that on the waterway? I don't know
exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about a user's fee here, but I'm saying that if you're going to apply that to boats, why don't you apply that to cars? And if you've got a big car, you have to pay a road tax every year for repairing the roads. And if you were the only people that should pay for airports are the people who use. But this is what I meant about a slippery slope. I don't think we want to get into that kind of situation any more than in the western part of the state. We should say only people in the western part of the state should pay to maintain the national parks out in that area, or whatever other public amenity there is. The Intercoastal Waterway was envisioned in 1804. This has been around for hundreds of years, and people's livelihoods are dependent upon it. Furthermore, many people, and I think Gareth was making this point earlier, many of the people who profit from the Intercoastal Waterway are not the big boat owners. They're the people that work in the restaurants or the marinas or the docking facilities or at the boat yards or whatever else it may happen to be. You have to realize that eastern North Carolina has absorbed some huge economic blows in the past 10 or 15 years, the loss of tobacco income, the loss of small manufacturing, and in some parts of the eastern North Carolina, which, by the way, eastern North Carolina, if you cut the state off at I-95, eastern North Carolina would be the poorest state in the United States. So this is a very, very poor area, and the importance of the millions of dollars that are put in are exaggerated by the fact that there aren't too many other options other than recreational or tourist options down here.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the Intercoastal Waterway, the issue of dredging it so that boats can pass through, and who should be picking up the tab for that. The federal government has done that for decades and decades, but the budget that's being proposed right now calls for no money for the North Carolina portion, 300 miles in North Carolina of the ICW, to be dredged in the coming fiscal year. Joining us right now is J.D. Brown, who is at the front lines of this dredging issue. He heads Sea Rescue. It's a towboat company at Ocean Island Beach. Thanks for being with us, J.D. Brown.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I understand you've been very busy thanks to the ICW shoaling up at Lockwood Folly Inlet and Shallotte Inlet.
We stay real busy.
Yeah. How much busier are you now than you were, say, you know, 3 or 4 years ago before the shoaling happened?
Well, last year, of course, we faced the shoaling at Lockwood Folly, and this past fall they dredged that, but now this year we're facing it at Shallotte, and they haven't dredged it, and both of the inlets, they pull the buoys in so you can't get in or out safely. So I would say that just over the past year, we're probably looking at a 70% increase of ungroundings at Shallotte Inlet.
Right. So the buoys have been pulled. Those are like aids that would help people know where they should go to get out to sea safely. Is that just an admission that there's no safe passage there and one shouldn't even try?
Well, it's not really that it's not safe passage. It is in one respect and another it's not. The Coast Guard uses a buoy tender that has a draft of 6 feet. Most of our boats in this area come nowhere close to that. But they use that as a guideline, so once their buoy tender can't navigate in 6 feet or better of water, they pull the buoys. Mm-hmm. So for a person who's not real familiar with the area, it is definitely not safe to try to navigate it.
So what kind of boats are you helping tow away because they've gone aground in these shallow waters? What are these, commercial boats, recreational boats?
No, these would be recreational boats. This time of the year, it would be transients coming back from Florida, heading back north.
Mm, I see. So this has to be good for business for you.
Oh, it is good for business for us. There's no doubt about that. But we're contractors for Towboat U.S. out of Arlington, and it's a little something like an insurance policy. So therefore, Boat U.S. is actually taking the brunt of this. But the business aspect is not nearly as important as the safety aspect.
Mm, right. So are you in favor, you'd be in favor of the dredging happening, resuming?
Oh, I'd love to see the dredging happening. And I'm a little bit surprised that I haven't heard a comment made. Some of the guests have mentioned something about the ICW being like the interstate highway. And it's true, it is. Mm. And as far as the money comes, practically every boater that purchases fuel is paying for federal highway use tax, and in most cases, state highway use tax, which certainly should be diverted and come back into the ICW. We shouldn't be paying for 95 off of the gas money we spend on the ICW.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's ample money there if it's just diverted back to where it's supposed to be.
So in other words, I mean, fuel that would be sold on the ICW for boats should have a tax on it that goes to paying for the dredging of the ICW?
It already is on it. We already pay it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're using the money for federal highways rather than for the ICW.
Mm-hmm. So who do you think should pay for that? Do you think it should still be federal money, or should the state get involved? It hasn't really gotten involved much in the past with paying for dredging the ICW. Or should it be local governments that kick in?
Well, I don't think local government should play a part in it per se. But I think... And I don't mean to sound like a parrot, but again, if they would just take our fuel tax money that we're already paying on gasoline and diesel fuel that we purchase and apply that toward the dredging of the ICW, the rest of it would be so minimal that it would be no problem coming up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, J.D. Brown, thank you for taking time out of what I understand are busy days these days down there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am.
J.D. Brown is head of Sea Rescue. That's a towboat service at Ocean Island Beach, which gets boats off of being aground in the shallow waters around Shallotte Inlet and Lockwood Folly. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. Gareth McGrath, you have been covering this issue for a number of years, and we've been talking about some solutions here. Some caller suggested a tax on all boats. I just wonder about, and this is no pun intended, but the very fluid nature of the ICW, of trying to assess who should pay, because it's not clear exactly who's using it and whether they can be taxed or a toll applied to them. Or
yeah, I agree, and I think that's one mechanism, funding mechanism I know that's being discussed, although not very publicly, is what happens down in Florida with some of their waterways, where there's a special tax district that covers waterfront property or property that backs onto these waterways. And the thinking is that because of a lot of the value of the property is derived from having access to the water, from being adjacent to the water, that those property owners should help fund the maintenance, the upkeep of that waterway. That possibly could be another option here, but I think down the road what we might see is a basket of funding mechanisms, possibly including federal money to maintain this waterway. It's not something that can be let go for too long. There's a section of the waterway up in New Jersey that is no longer maintained, and it's about 3 feet deep now and all but impassable except to very, very shallow boats. That's not going to happen here overnight, but the region where I live and where Dr. Lucci lives is called the Cape Fear is called that because of the unpredictable shoals, and it's quite easy for the shallow draft inlets and potentially parts of the waterway to shoal up very quickly.
Right. Let's go to John, who joins us from Bellhaven. Hi there, John.
Hello.
Hi, and you're on one of those towns that's on the Intracoastal Waterway.
Yes, Belhaven, the entire eastern North Carolina area depends on the ICW for economic vitality. And, of course, if the federal government doesn't pay for the dredging, then the state must, because it's essential to the health of the economy in these areas. And I think Dr. Lutzi had mentioned that. And I'll make one other comment that let's be careful. The ICW is so important that we pronounce it correctly. It is the Intracoastal Waterway. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, John from Belhaven, talking about the Intracoastal Waterway. And we're talking about how to pay for that. Jim Lutzi, is there a figure that we can put yet on its impact, economic impact in the state, or is that what the point of the study is?
That really is the point of the study. I mean, I think people throw around the term billions of dollars, and that covers a wide range, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. We will have a better idea after this study is done, and we want to be as precise as we can, because the easiest thing for people to do is to challenge your methodology or challenge your statistics. So we want to get a pretty good handle on it. But as several of people have observed, it's the issues are really wide ranging. If I'm going to go up and I'm going to Belhaven tonight, as a matter of fact. But going up to talk to some of the developments along the Pamlico and Albemarle Sounds. How do you count them? In other words, the amenity that is offered by a waterfront lot that allows you to take your boat up one of these rivers or into one of these sounds, and then have access shortly to the ocean. So these are it is hard to get a handle on. It's easier to calculate how much fuel is sold, or how many restaurant bills, or whatever. How many people come along and enjoy it and decide that they want to settle in North Carolina?
Well, we will continue our conversation with Jim Lutzi, who chairs a Coastal Waterway Advisory and Action Committee, and Gareth McGrath, reporter for the Wilmington Star News. And just ahead, we'll get to more of your calls at 1-877-962-9862. We're talking about the Intracoastal Waterway and dredging of it. Who should pay? That's all ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. We're talking this hour about the Intracoastal Waterway. It's 308 miles of the ICW that go through North Carolina. This is part of a much larger system that goes roughly from Virginia to Florida and then all around the Gulf Coast. It also in some way extends up into New England as well. But we're talking about the dredging of the ICW in North Carolina. The current proposed budget from the administration calls for no money to keep the dredging going on, and assuring that there are certain depths for the boats to pass through. With us to talk about all this is Gareth McGrath, who's a reporter for the Wilmington Star News, Jim Lutzi, a Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington, and currently chairing a Congressional Coastal Waterway Advisory and Action Committee. And joining us now is Orrin Pilkey, who is Professor Emeritus of Geology at Duke University. Welcome back to The State of Things, Orrin.
Glad to be here.
Well, you have been an outspoken critic of development on the barrier islands because you say that they are ever shifting and it's folly for man to try to keep one thing in place on the Outer Banks, on the islands. You've spoken out against beach renourishment, pumping sand back on the beaches. So I'm curious what your take is on dredging on the ICW, on the 300 miles of North Carolina's ICW?
Well, it's a fairly independent issue in the sense that only in the very rare circumstances, well, certain circumstances, it could impact on the erosion problem on the front side of the island. If, for example, like at Ocracoke, I think the Intracoastal Waterway is close to the Ocracoke Inlet, close to the inlet, and the sand can pour into the Intracoastal Waterway and actually take sand away from the beaches ultimately. But I think as far as nourishment is concerned, more and more the state and the federal government seems to be looking toward the spoil, the so-called dredge spoil that they pump up on nearby islands or whatever from dredging as a source of sand for beach nourishment.
Mm-hmm. And you would say that's not the thing to put on those beaches?
Well, we've had some bad luck with that lately. In Oak Island and Atlantic Beach, we had some very, very bad sand pumped up from spoil that was left over from dredging. So we've got to watch out for that.
Okay, this is a simple, very basic question, and if you can briefly give us an explanation for why it is that the channels fill up. So are there some places that would fill up more often than others that need more attention? Or at some point, do you think we should say, look, that thing is filling up every 6 months. Why should we continue to do this?
Yeah, there's a vast difference. It's really interesting geologically. There's a vast difference in the rate of filling in of channels, and it has to do with local currents and tidal currents and wind-driven currents. And also, of course, it may a lot of it may happen in storms, but there certainly is. Those who do the dredging intracoastal waterway know that there are some real hot spots that they have to dredge a lot. And those who run boats up and down know about these hot spots as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Gareth McGrath, are you running into that in your reporting about the ICW and dredging? Are there some places that just need it so often that people might say, well, maybe we just ought to let that shoal up and create a bigger island rather than an inlet there?
I wouldn't say they're willing to let them go, but there are hot spots, as Dr. Pilkey mentioned, Lockwood Folly that Jay was mentioning earlier, the Lockwood Folly Inlet and where the intercoastal crosses Lockwood Folly. That's always a hot spot. We have a hot spot near Reitzel Beach where a newly dredged Mason Creek, which serves Mason Inlet, is pouring sand into the intercoastal. That's another hot spot. As Dr. Pilkey said, the most local boaters know where these hot spots are and know how to avoid them. But again, it just highlights the need that maintenance of this waterway isn't something that can be just put off for 6 months, for a year, for 18 months. Lockwood Folly was dredged a few months ago, and as Jay mentioned, some of the buoys have been pulled because it's already shoaled up again. They're going to go back in and clean it out, so the Coast Guard is, I think, next month, but it only takes 2 months or so for some of these real troublesome areas to fill in and become dangerous crossings.
1-877-962-9862. Ken joins us. Ken, I understand you're somewhere on I-95 right now?
That is correct.
Okay, well, welcome to the show. Drive safely. Did you have a comment?
Yes, I'm a boater myself, and several of my friends have opted to take the outside route in the Atlantic because of Lockwood Folly being blocked. And at certain times of year, that can be quite hazardous. What would be the increased cost of having Coast Guard, having to go out and rescue some of these vessels making the outside route?
Mm-hmm. Jim Lutze, is that the kind of economic thing that you would look at?
Well, it certainly is. And, of course, if you look at the coast of North Carolina, you have some very dangerous points off the coast, Cape Hatteras and off Cape Fear, where the barriers run way out into the sea and therefore make it very dangerous for people. They don't call it the graveyard of the Atlantic for nothing. So certainly the safety factor is important. I'd be interested in what Orrin Pilkey would say about the inlets as far as they are concerned and what he thinks about the possibility or desirability of keeping those inlets open.
Orrin Pilkey?
Well, from the standpoint of beach nourishment, I mean, I think, that's a question regarding that the local communities have to look at. I think we've had, in some cases, we've had too many inlets that have not been. We've been doing some dredging, for example, at Bogue Inlet. This is before the beach nourishment project there, and the nourishment and the dredging didn't really make much difference. The natural inlet just took over again within a few weeks. So we did some unnecessary dredging. And we dredged Drum Inlet, and it turned out that failed because the Drum Inlet filled in too quickly, and it became economically infeasible to continue dredging. But I think if we are going to dredge, and I think probably everybody agrees with this, if we have good sand, we shouldn't dump that sand offshore. We should dump it on the beaches, or we should do side casting and just leave the sand within the tidal delta, within the body of sand through which the channel is moving. It's very important to do it that way.
Orrin, I'm shocked. I never thought I'd hear you suggest you could put sand on the beaches under any circumstances, but I'm delighted to hear you say that. These are real problems, and there is a problem where you dispose of your dredge material. In some cases, disposing of it is almost as expensive as doing the dredging itself.
Mm-hmm.
When the material is not usable, and I think everyone would agree that you should not put unusable dredge on the on the beaches.
Warren, you wanted to respond to this idea of, of actually being heard saying that you were okay with some of that re-nourishment.
I think I have a bad rap here. I'm not really against all beach nourishment. I am for truth and justice in the nourishment system, and where the people really understand, where those who are paying and so forth really understand what it's all about, and where public access is always present, and where we get good sand, and where we understand and try to mitigate some of the biological impacts. Mm-hmm. But I think right now, without going into it, I think right now the system in North Carolina, the beach nourishment system in North Carolina, is really out of control, and we have some really bad beaches that have come up in the last 4 years, and this is what we want to prevent in the future.
Well, I would like to go to Gareth McGrath for a moment, because the beach renourishment we're talking about is pumping sand, of course, onto the beaches to make them larger, and a number of coastal communities have been clamoring to do that. The question is, who pays? And Gareth, as I understand, those who are advocates for beach renourishment have joined forces with those who are advocates for, you know, let's get the federal government to continue to pay for the dredging of the ICW. I'm curious about these two joining forces. Does the beach renourishment advocates joining help the cause of those who simply want the dredging to happen?
Well, I think what those advocates are thinking is that now that both sides of the Barrier Island, if I can use that term loosely, are threatened with a loss of money, it makes sense to unite their causes, unite their voices, unite their political power, their ability, hopefully, to influence and to approach Washington and Raleigh. And I think we're going to be seeing an increased pressure brought onto Raleigh for funding these kind of projects. That's really the thinking behind the merging of the forces, as you said.
But Orrin Pilkey, as I understand you talking to some extent, you make a distinction between a lot of the dredging and a lot of the beach renourishment that you think has not gone right.
Yes, I think, let me tell you about what happened this spring when I brought a group of students down to Bogue Bank. And this is all in one day. We saw at at one end by Fort Macon, we saw a hopper dredge taking sand into the interior of the vessel. And we watched as it steamed out to sea to dump it out in the continental shelf somewhere. Then later on in the day, we went down to Bogue Inlet at the other end of Bogue Banks, and we saw another dredge system going on where they were pumping sand from the inlet, it's a fairly natural inlet, and they were taking sand from this inlet and pumping it up on the beaches. And so they were doing just the wrong things. If we were going to take sand to pump on the beaches, we should take it from Beaufort Inlet, which already has a big channel and has a jetty on Bogue Bank and things like that.
Are you saying it's a better sand?
Yeah, in either case, it's good sand. Mm. The best possible sand is found at tidal deltas.
Okay. Well, we go to the phones. Claiborne joins us from Burlington. Hi there, Claiborne.
Hi, Melinda. How are you today?
Fine. I should say this is Claiborne Young, who writes guides to the coast of North Carolina for those who are recreational boaters. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be there. I just have a quick point I wanted to make, and it's a matter of perspective. You know, the Intracoastal Waterway has been with almost all of us all our lives, so it's almost a little bit difficult to conceive of what it's going to be like if we do not have an Intracoastal Waterway anymore. I would ask everyone to consider what the impact on the economy of coastal North Carolina, and for that matter, pretty much all the southeastern USA coastal areas, if the semi-annual so-called snowbird migration is cut, which is to say we don't have boats coming north in the spring and going south in the winter with the seasons. If the Intracoastal Waterway is indeed cut anywhere along its length, it is going to have a major disruptive effect on this semi-annual migration, and it's going to have a great effect on our coastal economies.
Now, Claiborne Young, you've been involved in past years of trying to get people to lobby members of Congress and get that money restored. What's your take on this year? Because, you know, there's no money that's being set aside in North Carolina for dredging the ICW in the president's budget. There is, we should say, about $7 million for dredging Oregon Inlet, but as far as the other 300 miles of the ICW go, there's nothing. What do you think the chances are this year of restoring some of that federal money?
Well, there are some people working very, very hard to do that, in particular the Atlantic Intracoastal Waterway Association. I think the odds are probably about 50-50 at this point that might happen. I would say overall that it's incredibly short-sighted on the federal government's part to be denying what really is in the whole scope of the federal budget a pittance of money to keep open this great natural resource that we have. And I would certainly urge all of our congressional representatives to take a much longer look at this and realize what we're about to lose.
Okay. Well, Claiborne Young, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Melinda.
Claiborne Young writes coastal cruising guides to North Carolina as well as other states along the eastern seaboard in the U.S. 1-877-962-9862 is the number. Gareth McGrath, you've been covering this for some time, and I know reporters don't usually like to go out on a limb and make a prediction, but later this year, will North Carolina see any federal money in the new fiscal year for the dredging?
I think there will be some money that shows up in the budget, but again, I think it will be minimal amounts, $1, $2, maybe $3 million. Again, another Band-Aid approach to maintaining the waterway. But I think possibly the most interesting aspect of the waterway maintenance issue that's come up recently is the General Assembly deciding to fund a study, a bit under $100,000 cost of study, looking at how much the Army Corps of Engineers spends maintaining all of North Carolina's water resources, focusing on the intercoastal waterway and the inlets. And really what this is a first step, just trying to get a handle on if and when the state decides to take on some of those responsibilities, how much it would cost, and potentially to prioritize those responsibilities, which dredging projects do they wish to involve themselves in. And that study should be done, I believe, late this summer. And I think it'll be interesting to see the debate that follows that.
Okay. Bill, we have time for one more call. Bill joins us from Burlington. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Just wanted to make a point that the law of unintended consequences once more rides the rails, and that the same people that elect right-wing politicians, such as Jones, such as Burr, such as Dole, people down from the coast are now crying the blues after these contrived tax cuts, this alleged war economy, and now that now it's come home to bite them. But they're not identifying their own actions as part of the problem.
Well, we should say that I think there was a press release from Republican Congressman Jones' office today that he was asking that there be more money put into the Corps of Engineers budget. But we take your point. And Jim Lutze, where do you think this is going to go from here?
I don't disagree at all with what Gareth was going to say has said, but I really think this is bad national public policy. I think that the idea that individual states and individual areas should pay for amenities that are used by the public at large or are a desirable aspect of the quality of life is a slippery slope and a dangerous road to go down. I don't think that we ought to. You can see where it goes if each state decides it's going to look out for its own interest and the federal government isn't looking out for the general interest.
And as you said earlier, that doesn't happen right now with the interstate system. It's not as though it's federally funded, one state to the next. Okay. And one thing we should add, Gareth, you have reported on this, that I believe that Camp Lejeune has weighed in as well, making the case for needing the ICW for its troop movements through there, too.
Yeah, for New River Inlet, for bringing some of their landing craft in, practicing amphibious landings, and also moving men and materiel out to the larger ships offshore. Yes, they have raised the issue of basically national security when it comes to maintaining New River, which is one of the half dozen shallow draft inlets we have here.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you all for joining us today to talk about the ICW, the ditch, as it's known by some, and we will keep watching on this story. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye now. Gareth McGrath is reporter for the Wilmington Star News. Jim Lutze is Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington and Chair of the state's Congressional Coastal Waterway Advisory and Action Committee. And Orrin Pilkey is Professor Emeritus of Geology at Duke University. That's the state of things for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you have a comment about our program, our email address is sot@wunc.org. Support for the state of things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Melinda Pencava.